97.5, The Fanatic.
Ready?
I was born ready.
I can honestly say that's the best news I've heard all day.
Joe Torti Show.
Kind of reminded me of a dark, gothic Neil Diamond.
That's like exactly what I'm going for.
This is the Joe Torti Show.
What show are you listening to?
Joe Torti Show.
I'm trying to be patient, but you're making it incredibly difficult.
I can say big loud things. I can be demonstrative.
Can we just end this already?
Now it's time. The Joe Torti Show.
Yes, it is. What's going on, Philadelphia? Joe Torti here with you, 97.5. The Fanatic. Hanging out with you on a Thursday. Where'd the week go? I mean, maybe it's just the holiday and everything else, but don't look now. Playoff football is almost upon us. Philadelphia hosting Seattle. Seahawks coming to town. And, of course, the Eagles locking up as the hottest team in the NFL with the team that, quite frankly, is, if they're not on life support, they're really close. They're right there about to be put on life support. And here's the thing. I've been trying to look at this game from all angles, and I've been mostly talking, if you've listened to the shows during this week here, you've been hearing me talk more about what happened at the end of the season versus what is about to happen on Sunday. We haven't done a whole lot of Eagles preview and things like that, and you know, we'll have the opportunity to do that tonight over the course of the next 3 hours. And then, of course, I'm on as well tomorrow in a little baby show from 11 to midnight. But looking at the game against Seattle, I have done as much research on this game to preview it as I have for any other game during my time covering the Eagles. And I have to say, there is this scale that I use that's like the should you be concerned scale. And pretty much what it is you know, you're aware of some teams more than others. You get points on the scale for it being a divisional game because of the familiarity. You get points for the spot that the Eagles are in, home or road, caliber of opponent, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's a confidence scale. My concerns for this playoff game, Eagles hosting the Seahawks, is literally at a zero. I have zero concerns whatsoever about this game. There's no way that Seattle's going to win this game. There is no way that the Eagles are going to lose this game. And I know that people will point to some stuff. Right, there are a couple of different areas where people point to. Oh, well, how can you say that when the other team's got Russell Wilson? That's one thing that they say. The other one is, oh, look at DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett against the Eagles' defensive backs. Look at the Eagles' corners. How come the Eagles' corners are always so bad? And what about Jadeveon Clowney? Man, the Eagles should have traded for him. Look at how good he's done. Look at how well he's played over the course of the time that he's been acquired. On and on and yada, yada, yada. The Eagles haven't played this team. They don't know that team. You've been playing against the dregs of the NFC East. Probably historically a bad conference this year. And to that point, granted, I'll give you that one. I will give you that one. Eagles have gotten a lot done in the last month or so as a result of really, really questionable opposition. I'll give you that. But the other half of it is that don't look now, the Eagles have been playing really, really well over the course of that past month. Now, it's not to say that they've been dominating teams. It's not to say that you've been running into boat races for everybody and nobody wants to play the Eagles because they've been winning every game 30 to nothing. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is that the Eagles have figured out life after all of the players that have been injured. They have figured out life after Alshon Jeffrey. They've figured out life after Jordan Howard, DeSean Jackson, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, they had some new injury news, obviously, with Brandon Brooks being added to injured reserve. He's not going to be available. Still too early to call on Zach Ertz. I'd be surprised if he were available. There are people looking at the Lane Johnson injury and wondering how effective he can be. But we'll get to that. Before I talk about anything else, before I talk about Russell Wilson, before I talk about DK Metcalf, before I talk about any of the Seahawks situations, we need to take a real clear look at where the Eagles are. And if you're honest with yourself and you take off any kind of biased glasses that you have about the Philadelphia Eagles, it becomes clear that the Eagles are in a really, really good place right now relative to where they were. People talk about the additions of Greg Ward and Boston Scott and their increased roles with the Eagles as being potentially a negative. Or to the point, they use it to bolster a pro Carson Wentz argument, let's say, where it's look at what Wentz has done, understanding that, look, he has to overcome all of this stuff. Look at all of the people that he's had to deal with, all of the different weapons. 4,000 yards with no 500-yard receiver, blah, 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 right? All of that. Without looking at it through an objective lens. And the objective lens is that I don't care how you feel about Alshon Jeffrey and the way that he performed in the Super Bowl. I don't care about how you feel about Nelson Agholor or DeSean Jackson, right? And maybe that one's unfair because Jackson hasn't been available for the entire season. But when the Eagles' offense was at quote-unquote full strength, it never looked this good. It doesn't look as good as it does right now. The Eagles are going to beat Seattle on Sunday at home, reason number one. But reason number two is that you've got to just look at this as a snapshot, a moment in time for where these two teams are. Seattle is the walking wounded. They have no run game to speak of whatsoever. That's because they don't have any running backs left. They brought Marshawn Lynch up off the couch, and I know people are very excited about that in terms of seeing him and seeing him return to beast mode status. I think you're going to be waiting for that for quite some time, to watch him return to beast mode status this year. Now, instead, with everything to play for down the stretch, Seattle lost 3 out of their last 4 games. And 2 of those losses were to non-playoff divisional teams. And Russell Wilson hasn't thrown 300 yards since the first weekend in November. Meanwhile, you look at what the Eagles have done. Come from behind victories. Back against the wall wins in spots where you have to have them. Growth from a chemistry perspective, an increase in confidence between the quarterback and the rest of the weapons there. All of it adds up to a game that, quite frankly, the Eagles cannot and will not lose. Look, Seattle's a good team. And just about any other time during the season, just about any other time, I would take Seattle. I would take Seattle here, there, or on a neutral site. But just the way that it's shaking out now, the way that the players have played since then, the Eagles are going to win. The Eagles, they're going to win this game. I know that there's concern. I know that people are worried about the DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett matchups. We're going to talk about those in a little bit. I heard Mike Missanelli talking about Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf and what they've done recently. We're going to reiterate some of those stats, but let's just say that they're not as fearsome as they were early on in the season. Tyler Lockett, coming back off of the injury that he experienced, has not been the exact same explosive player. Still a good player, but not the same explosiveness. DK Metcalf, don't get me wrong, the stats, you know, 58 catches, 900 yards, and 7 touchdowns have been good. Really good. And much better than, say, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. Having said that, though, Metcalf has had one 100-yard receiving game. One. He has scored 2 touchdowns dating back to week 10. He's kind of the drop king. He, in that respect, I guess he would fit right in with the Eagles, because we talk about the Eagles and everything else, all the drops that they've had. DK Metcalf would fit right in from that perspective. So lost three fumbles, which is kind of remarkable for a wide receiver. Not what you'd call a game-breaking wide receiver at this point. Had a good game the last time we saw him against San Francisco. 6 catches, 81 yards, and a touchdown. But that was the last time that he broke 80 yards, dating back to Week 9, that 6-catch, 123-yard performance against Tampa Bay. And then defensively, we talked about, of course, Jadeveon Clowney. And how come the Eagles didn't get him? How come the Eagles let another big-time player get to a different NFC contender? Well, quite frankly, Jadeveon Clowney had a monster game. Monster. Full-on monster game a couple of weeks back. Absolutely beast mode performance. And, you know, I'll take you back to it. Just so I can let you know specifically what he did that was so special over the course of that contest. He had this is against San Francisco, the overtime win. He had the sack, the forced fumble, 5 tackles, wrecked San Francisco. And it's cost him because it looks like he hasn't been nearly as explosive since then. He's had 2 solo tackles in the last 2 weeks. Look, there are a lot of things that you can look at with this game and say that the Seahawks have had better players over the course of the season. You're absolutely right. The problem is that has nothing to do with what's going on Sunday. What's happening on Sunday is that you've got the Eagles, an ascending team, who won the games that they had to win when they had to win them to make the postseason, and they earned the right to host a playoff game. On the flip side, you've got a Seattle team that, while Russell Wilson was getting MVP accolades in the mid-portion of the season, had everything in front of them, and you can say all you want about the playoff seeding system, but they didn't take care of business the way that they had to. They lost 3 out of 4 down the stretch, and now they've got to come here to Philadelphia without any running backs, with Russell Wilson kind of declining over the course of the last month from a stats and production standpoint. And with a team overall that is not clicking nearly as well as they did the early part of the season. The Eagles aren't worlds better than the Seahawks, but they're not going to lose. This is one that I normally get antsy before every single playoff game. This is one that I am cool as a cucumber. This is a stone cold Eagles victory. I know that people are worried, and we'll talk about it. We'll talk about your concerns at 610-632-0975. But it's going to be a hard sell. If you look at things objectively and you look at the way that the ebbs and flows of the NFL season have gone, I would say that there are few reasons for optimism if you are an NFL fan, if you're a Seahawks fan in particular, and you don't want to see the Eagles advance. In a home game here, it's in this team's DNA. 610-632-0975. Let's go to Nick in Hershey next on 97.5, The Fanatic. What's going on, Nick?
Hey, Joe. Sorry, I got to take my gloves off here.
No sweat.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's crazy listening to the earlier programs that everybody's all up in arms with Sixers. Remind me, they play 82 games, if I'm not mistaken.
Last I checked, yeah.
Yeah. So this is 16 games, and who would have thought, what was it, like 6 games ago, we would ever be here losing to the Dolphins? I mean, I was up in hunting camp, and I thought, you know, we're done.
Mm-hmm.
But watching this team climb its way back with the pieces, or without the pieces that they had, is amazing. These young kids have stepped up, and I actually called Mikey earlier. I said, you know, I'm tired of the practice squad players. Yes, the Davises and Burnett's are practice squad players, but I feel like Boston Scott has made himself known. He's not an every down back, and I read an article that Miles will play on Sunday, and then Ward proved his point. He's not a number one, but he's a two, maybe 2A, 3A player. You know, this team is resilient, and their defense, especially playing at home, is top three defense playing at home. Look, what 16.9 points a game. You know, this team, we have a home game. We were playing against Seattle. It is, and again, we always say it's the revenge game.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Carson, this is his first playoff game. He's going to play lights out. He's played lights out the last 4 weeks that he's had to play. And since he's played Seattle, he's thrown, what, 10 touchdowns, one interception?
Yep.
You know, it's amazing. And I am so excited for this game. I like you said, I will be surprised if they lose, but I will not be surprised if they win. And I expect a win here. So, hey, go Birds. Good talking to you, Joe. Eagles, baby!
Love it, Nick. Good stuff, man. Thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it. And Nick laid out a lot of the things that are going on in my mind now. It's not necessarily about the Sixers, but it's more of like, you know, this is a game that the Eagles have a better chance of winning than not. Even if you like Seattle in this game, which I would understand, no one's going to say that the Eagles are going to get blown out at home by the Seahawks, right? And last we checked, if you look at the record, the Seahawks are one of the best teams in the NFC. Now, like I said, faded down the stretch, even with everything to play for. Injuries, racking up concerns there. Speaking of injuries, Jadeveon Clowney down the stretch missed two games with knee and hip injuries, then missed two more with a core injury that's expected to require surgery. Yeah. He's banged up. Seattle doesn't have any edge rushers. They're terrible at sacking the quarterback. And I mean absolutely god-awful at sacking the quarterback. They're getting Quandre Diggs back to play safety, which could be big. But, I mean, from a pressure perspective, they're going to really struggle, I think, even with a banged-up Eagles offensive line, by the looks of things. There just aren't a whole lot of matchups that Seattle wins. That's what it is. It's not that I think that the Seahawks stink or that the Eagles are great. It's just point out to me the matchups where the Eagles definitely lose. And I can point to you a lot of matchups that the Eagles absolutely win. John and Broomall is next on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, John? How you doing?
All right. How you doing?
Great. What's up?
You know, look, I like your confidence, and believe me, I'm an Eagles fan. I want them to win. The one thing I just can't get out of my head is the weakness of our D-backs.
Mm.
And even though Seattle will not be able to, hopefully not be able to run, you know, maybe they have a guy off the street who becomes a star in a playoff game, but I think we can contain the run. I'm just really worried about our D-backs. They've been the Achilles all year long. They just don't. You know, you look at other D-backs in the league and the teams that are in the playoffs. You know, these guys can turn around and cover at the same time. You know, we've been getting better, but I just have a feeling Russell Wilson may just take advantage of that.
Well, so if I'm Seattle, John, I'm not even trying to run. I'm trying to have Russell Wilson throw the ball 60 times, and we'll see what happens. But the thing about that, though, is that the Eagles have had a different defensive back core, in my opinion, since Craven LeBlanc returned. I think that he's been a big-time stabilizing force that I didn't expect. So, I mean, other than that, I think that they'll be able to scheme around if they have one corner who can hold up. Are you more concerned about Metcalf or Lockett in this case?
Well, I just think it's more so if they can run the pattern. I mean, Douglas, I don't know, Douglas just gives me the heebie-jeebies back.
I get
there.
That.
But between Carroll and Wilson, that's obviously what they're going to try to exploit. If we're up to the task, then I think obviously we're going to win. I agree that we're not going to get blown out. I don't think either team is going to get blown out, but we just have not been a team that you can predict the way we're going to play. Over the past four games, playing weak opponents
mm-hmm.
to come out. You know, maybe Seattle's lost three or four, but come on, they took it to, and believe me, I'm not a Seattle fan, they took it to San Fran, you know, right up until the last play of the game. They were hanging with them. And believe me, if San Fran was coming here, this wouldn't even be in question. We would get destroyed.
I think that you might be right about that, John. And thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it. And I'm not saying anything about the Eagles next week until next week. But look, like they got in that position, Seattle did, by losing the two touchdowns against Arizona at home. Like, that is they took it to San Fran. They got way, way up for San Francisco to the point where they just blew by Arizona, and Arizona returned the favor by blowing by them on the field. The defensive backs are an area of concern. I'll give you that clearly. But I'm not confident in the Seahawks' ability to protect Russell Wilson. I am confident in Jim Schwartz's ability to do some things, provided that you have some guys who hold up. For example, I think I have confidence in Craven LeBlanc's ability to acquit himself well out there against whoever Seattle brings into the fold. The question is, do you think that DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett are going to torch you? That is the only question. And the Eagles have had a lot of experience getting torched by really good wide receivers this year. But look at what they've done since, right? Like Amari Cooper is a receiver that absolutely full-on owned the Philadelphia Eagles. And they did enough to mitigate him to the point where Dallas pulled him out of the game. Look, I don't know for sure that that is an easy matchup for the Eagles. That is going to be the biggest thing that keeps Jim Schwartz awake going into this game. It's going to be the biggest area of focus for the Eagles in this game. But that's why they get paid. That's why that is specifically what you're trying to conquer in this game. That's the dragon that you're trying to slay. And I don't actually believe that it's something that Pete Carroll wants to do. It's not in Pete Carroll's DNA, despite him continuing to pass on the goal line, which is just kind of insane considering the history. He is a balance-focused coach. He wants offensive balance. While it might be in Seattle's best interest to have Russell Wilson throw the ball 50 times, can Pete Carroll swallow his pride and go ahead and do that? I'm not sure. 610-632-0975. I don't see a way that the Eagles lose this game. I don't see a way that they lose this game at home. And quite frankly, I don't know where all of the wailing and gnashing of teeth is coming from. People saying big bad Seattle is coming to town. It's the Joe Torty Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Welcome back, Joe Torty Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Josh Rabick is producing this evening. We're hanging out until 9 o'clock, and then from 9 until pregame, we've got Flyers Weekly right here on 97.5 The Fanatic. So plenty of hockey talk coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. But for now, we are taking a look at the Eagles-Seahawks playoff game and previewing the matchups and why I just don't feel bad about this at all. I don't feel any kind of way that the Seahawks are going to. It's not that they're not going to be in the game. It's that they're not going to win. And I think that every other time, because I don't even know, have the Seahawks ever lost to the Eagles and Pete Carroll's been the head coach? I don't know if that's ever happened. I think that the Eagles have kind of been owned by the Seahawks in this tenure, right? Just not this time. It's just, like I said, I laid it out there, even from a coaching perspective, from a talent perspective on the roster and things like that, everybody's at full strength. I feel really, really good home, road, neutral site about the Seahawks, right? I feel really great. Just not now. They are a ground-based team. Look, don't get me wrong. I know Russell Wilson is a really good player, deserved all of the MVP buzz that he was getting early on before Lamar said, step aside, son, let me handle this. But balance is such an essential part of what the Seahawks do, despite what we were talking about with throwing near the goal line. The ground game is how they really finish those drives. Chris Carson, outside of being a fumbler, was a monster this year. He's not available. And yeah, the Eagles do have some injury concerns. Brandon Brooks, that's a big blow. Miles Sanders, Missed practice today. Wouldn't read into that too much. We'll see. If he misses practice tomorrow, then I would say start sounding the alarm. But so far, so good from an injury perspective. Zach Ertz, I am assuming, wants to go, but at last report has not been cleared for contact yet and was practicing in a limited capacity. And then Lane Johnson, that's going to be a big mystery too, how effective Lane Johnson is, because Tim McManus has reported on this and several other people as well for ESPN and other media outlets, how remarkable the split is when Lane Johnson's in the game, what Carson Wentz's numbers look like, and when Lane Johnson is out of the game, what Wentz's numbers look like. Now, I would argue, in addition to his pass protection abilities, it's also because Lane Johnson's so important in the ground game, and the more support that Wentz has from the ground game, the better his numbers are anyway. But either way, it doesn't diminish the fact that the Lane Johnson injury is the big one that a lot of people are keeping their eyes on, in addition to, obviously, Miles Sanders, who has, I mean, I'm not saying that he's going to win Rookie of the Year, but he deserves to be in every single conversation for Rookie of the Year, considering what he's put together during his maiden voyage here. So the, and Matt tweets in, Matt LaPenta, because Josh tweeted out, and we'll get Josh's thoughts in a moment. When the Eagles offense was at full strength, it never looked this good. That's what I said early on. We were asking about your confidence level. Matt brought up, so game one of the season. Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. But realistically, you didn't have DeSean Jackson, I'm going to say, for the entire year after that. So you had to somehow get used to not having DeSean Jackson. And as I've pointed out multiple times in the past, if DeSean Jackson, if you're going to make the case to me that DeSean Jackson is so important to this offense, then Howie Roseman messed up big, big time in the formation of this roster. Because that's like saying, hey, if I don't have a car, I can't go to work. And the car that you get is a junker, and you don't get any kind of insurance or backup plan for it. Like, that's your own fault. If DeSean Jackson, off injured, is going to be a focal point of your offense, and your offense can't survive without DeSean Jackson, and you don't have any kind of DeSean Jackson replacement in the wings, that's your problem. Now, I would say that the rest of it, Alshon Jeffrey, Nelson Agholor, everybody else that you saw for most of the season, DeSean Jackson, to me, just quite frankly, I consider him a bonus at this point. Now, the reports are that you might actually get Jackson back in the divisional round. I have concerns. I have concerns because how fast is he going to be 2 weeks from now? That's the only question that matters. And the reason why it matters is because people got excited about hearing DeSean Jackson running 19 miles an hour in rehab. There's no perspective. There's no context. People have no idea what that means. Leonard Fournette topped out at 21 miles an hour this year. So you're telling me that DeSean Jackson running 2 miles an hour slower than Leonard Fournette is what you signed up for? Hell no, it's not. If DeSean Jackson's running 19 miles an hour, he's just a small Nelson Agholor. That's what you're working with right there. You don't need that. You need fast as can be DeSean Jackson if you're getting him back. So that's what I'm counting on, too. The divisional round is the divisional round, though, and of course we've got wild card weekend coming up. Eagles earned the right to host a wild card playoff game. And yet, shockingly, it doesn't seem like, with all of the injuries that Seattle has, and with how well the Eagles' defense especially has played at home, it doesn't make any sense to me, the concern in this game. Do you see how different the splits are when it comes to the Eagles going on the road versus staying at home? Their defense is remarkably better at home. I don't know why. It's insane to me that happens. That you can't consistently perform at not even the same, but just like a similar level defensively. I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's the home cooking. I don't know if it's the routine. I have no idea what it is. But the fact that the Eagles are at home means a lot. Now, I'm not coming in and saying that the Eagles are conquerors, right? I understand that nobody wanted to win the NFC East. And like a player that you don't really want in an auction draft, sometimes you just get stuck with it. Eagles got stuck with the NFC East title. But after the loss to the Dolphins, it was a three-game losing streak. Eagles were at 5-7 and had a less than 26% chance to make the playoffs. But then they turned it around. Carson Wentz turned it around. And they ended the season on a four-game winning streak that came within the division. Eagles are 4-6 outside of the NFC East, but it doesn't matter. You earned the home game. And that's what it is. Miles Sanders, with his ankle injury, is just questionable. All reports point to him playing in the game. Zach Ertz battling the broken rib and lacerated spleen, but he has fought through potential career-ending injuries in the past. So that's something that I'm going to be keeping a close eye on. I'm not sure how much he'll be able to give you. But so here's what ESPN lays out for us. The Eagles have been, and look, you are what your record says you are. I don't believe that that's true. Look, I know that Bill Parcells said that and everybody talks about it. I don't think it's true. I think it's nonsense in a lot of cases. I think you're a good football team if you're a good football team, and sometimes the wins and losses don't always reflect that, right? We can fight about that another day. But ESPN says that the Eagles have been a better team than their valleys would indicate, so the low points would indicate this season. Defensive value over average, they finished 1 percentage point behind the 13-3 Packers in 11th place and ahead of both the Bills and the Texans. And there's a lot of buzz about the Bills and the Texans being able to make noise in the playoffs here. So it's something that we've got to consider that, hey, maybe we're not giving them enough credit and maybe that slow period has gone behind them. And I've got to tell you the truth. I'm going to be watching closely at corner. Is it possible that the Sidney Jones renaissance, like, is just right on time? I've admired Sidney Jones this year in particular because you fall to the very absolute rock bottom of the depth chart. You enter the game with full confidence that you will be targeted on this very next play. And we've seen players get burned all the time. Anytime there's an injury at corner, they throw immediately at the replacement. And more often than not, you see it for a touchdown or a big gain or something like that. You see it in college. You see it in the NFL. You see it everywhere. It happened in the Eagles game with Washington when Josh Norman comes off the bench. You're like, yep, Greg Ward is going to sun Josh Norman. At which point I tweeted that Josh Norman just got mossed by the Eagles' fourth string quarterback, which, I mean, I guess is technically true. But Sidney Jones comes in and all he does is make plays when he gets targeted. Pass breakups, deflections, etc. Is it possible that he's finally ready? I'm not counting on Jalen Mills. Neither should you. Are you crazy? Shouldn't be counting on any of these guys, except the ones who have proven themselves. Kayvon LeBlanc has not done anything wrong this season, right? Everything that we've seen has been like, hey, Kayvon LeBlanc's in good position. He even tackled Saquon Barkley when they all said it was impossible. And then on the flip side, I don't know. Maybe it is just a small sample size, but it seems to me that Sidney Jones is in a better place too. Eagles have some stuff. They just have some stuff this game, this week, that's going to be difficult for Seattle to contend with. 610-632-0975. It's the Joe Torti Show hanging out until 9 o'clock right here on the Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
The Fanatic.
Okay.
back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Josh Rabick is producing this evening's program. We're hanging out until 9 o'clock. Then from 9 until Flyers pregame, it is Fanatic Flyers Weekly. We do have open lines on the phone, 610-632-0975. As we're looking ahead to this game against the Seattle Seahawks and the Eagles hosting a playoff game. People just take this for granted. Josh, I'm trying to figure out what it is. Like, there have been a lot of people talking about the Sixers, and understandably so, right? You've got Josh Richardson talking about an accountability problem. Since Christmas, you're losing to literally everybody that ties their shoes and comes out on the court to play against you. I understand that, but last I checked, the Eagles were at 5-7 really not that long ago, and now they're all set to host a playoff game. I don't know if we just take it for granted or what it is, but it's kind of remarkable to me that it's not generating at least a lot of the interest, the same level of interest as a regular season Sixers stretch here. I don't know what it is.
Expectations are huge, Joe. You know how it works. We were big on the Eagles before the season. Fans got disappointed. They hopped off. They lost interest after getting mad. They're with the Sixers. Sixers, huge expectations. They're in the angry phase. If this keeps up, they are going to hop off it as well.
Yeah, but the gross part of it is that we've been hopping off. You hopped off the Phillies because you were excited that the Eagles were going to start after seeing the Phillies weren't going to meet expectations.
Yeah, it's a dangerous cycle. It just keeps happening from one team to the next.
So what is it now? Is it officially basketball season in Philly? Or are the Sixers disappointing enough that it's fire season in Philly? Like, what are we actually doing right now? I need to be caught up.
I still think it's basketball season, but they are a couple bad weeks away from it becoming hockey season.
Okay. All right. I'm just checking. I want to make sure that I'm wearing the right attire here around the station. 610-632-0975. Your phone number to join the conversation. On Twitter, it's at Joe Torti and at 97.5 The Fanatic. Colin Berger tweets in that same article, which is the one that was talking about the Eagles, all of the, there's a good article on ESPN that's kind of like a playoff primer that Bill Barnwell wrote, talking about why all of the teams in the playoffs are both better and worse than you think they are. The Bills allowed 24 or fewer points in 15 out of 16 games. The Eagles are the lone outlier with 31 points at Buffalo. Fingers crossed for Ertz and Sanders. Side stat, the Eagles are the last team to allow 24 or less in all 16. Yes, that was the 2001 season. Good article. Philadelphia Sports on Twitter tweets in, it was fully healthy one game all season. They hit on 50-yard touchdowns twice. Come on, get it together. I don't look at that as a good offense. Splash plays are, don't get me wrong, you take them. Splash plays are splash plays. They're good when you can get them. But you can't have an offense that's designed around the big play. For example, in that same article, it's talking about the Kansas City Chiefs and their reliance on the explosive play, and they're playing against a Buffalo Bills team that has minimized the number of explosive plays that they have surrendered over the course of the season. And in the postseason, I think what we've seen is that offense tends to lose out to defenses unless the offense is so far superior to the defense that, you know, you can't even fathom it. Like, the best example of this playing out was the, what was it? The Seahawks-Broncos Super Bowl, right? That was a ridiculous smackdown by Seattle. 43-8. And Seattle was the underdog, if you remember, in that game. Peyton Manning and company just going hog wild and everything else, right? But then, as fate would have it, the defense steps up and just demolishes and dominates, and you've got Seattle just doing their thing. Malcolm Smith had the like 70-yard touchdown on the interception. That was crazy. They didn't score. Denver didn't until the third quarter. I don't know. So for me, the ability to hit the big play doesn't determine a good offense. A good offense, to me, is able to sustain and not rely on. For you know, ever notice last week I was watching the Patriots lost to the Dolphins. You know why?
Dolphins better than the Patriots? No. It's because the Dolphins emptied their entire bag. Everything they had double passes, they had reverses, everything that they didn't even think would work at all during the regular season, because most of the time it wouldn't. They had a bunch of junk, or as people in the gaming community call it, jank. There was a lot of jank that they had. And New England was like, what are we supposed to do with this? Is that sustainable for an entire season? The Wildcat was a revolutionary force in the NFL until offensive and defensive coordinators got together and had, what, like 3 months to look at it? They had the Wildcat defeated in 3 months. You think that the Eagles would have lived on 50-yard touchdown passes to DeSean Jackson all season? You think that's the way that it would have worked? I don't. Maybe we just disagree. Vinny in West Philly's next on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Vin?
Yo, Joe.
How are you?
I'm good. How you been?
Doing great.
All right. Happy New Year with
us. Same to you.
Hey, listen, I just like, I got a little pep peeve with the practice squad, you know what I mean? They say, I think those guys are real good football players. And the narrative, like, yeah, Wentz drug these practice squad players to the playoffs. In my opinion, I think those receivers made Wentz better. Not that he's not a good quarterback or nothing. He just made those two made them better. Their style of play.
It could go both ways, right? I mean, it could be that Wentz elevated them and they did the same for him.
Agree. You know what I mean? I've seen Ward making plays in the preseason. Agree. You know, I think that they them type of receivers work good with Wentz. My opinion, his accuracy is not all great. You know, a lot of times you need he throw the ball and Dirk was catching some fantastic balls.
No, oh, yeah.
Did you see the ball where there was a screen play over top of Boston Scott? He one-handed that catch.
Yep.
That was a bad throw. I'm not trying to make myself look bad. I'm just saying.
No, but to your point, he doesn't have pinpoint accuracy. He's not Drew Brees. Right. He's not putting every ball right on the money.
Right. So you need a player that's going to get the ball. He ain't had those. No, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Aguilar, we all know, Ocean, whatever, injured, whatever. These guys are actually pin high point that rock was going to get you.
Yeah, you're right about that.
Doing that. So in the same way how Nick Foles was doing last year, Nick Foles, though, he threw a lot of live balls that Alshon was going to get.
Yes. Yep.
Okay, that's it, Jeff.
No, Vinny, that was good stuff, man. I didn't want to interrupt you. You were on a roll there. But the thing that you bring up about these guys not being – you know, quote unquote practice squad players anymore is definitely true. Is Greg Ward going to be on anybody's practice squad? Greg Ward's making a roster. Is Boston Scott going to be on anybody's practice squad? Boston Scott's on the team. Like that's the way that it's going to go here. Now, the question that I have and the question that I've always had, I have two main concerns with Doug Peterson that I've always had and they've remained consistent. And you've been listening to the show long enough, you probably know what they are already. Number one, the problem is the affinity for falling in love with the pass and not being committed to maintaining the run game. I've talked about that. That's a different show. The second thing is that Doug Peterson is an incredibly loyal coach. And he's loyal to guys who have proven themselves, who are veterans, who've been around the block. And the thing that I admire the Patriots for is understanding the very cold knife, the dark side, the business side of football, where it's like, hey, you are just about to hit the expiration date. It's time for you to go. Eagles don't do that. And I believe that Doug Peterson is involved in that process, whether it's Alshon Jeffrey or it's Brandon Graham or it's Jason Peters or it's Darren Sproles. There are a lot of guys that have been given the benefit of the doubt when they probably should not have been given the benefit of the doubt when it comes to returning to the roster. And it's an even harder case to make now because you see how well Greg Ward and Boston Scott have done since they've been on the roster. The point is that these guys probably weren't practice squad players from the beginning. The question is, how did these guys not make the roster? How can you look at Greg Ward and Nelson Aguilar for any reason other than the fact that Aguilar's on his fifth-year option, he's making $9 million, and say, all right, Aguilar is better than Ward. What is something that he does better? Similarly speaking, if you've got Darren Sproles, and you've got Boston Scott, and you called the same plays for them in the preseason, and you had them run the same drills, you had them go through the same stuff, is there going to be that big of a difference that you don't want somebody who's got younger legs like Boston Scott versus Darren Sproles, who's literally chasing the yardage records in the NFL, all-purpose yards? Just food for thought. Ryan, you're going to be up first. I want to give you your full time. 610-632-0975. Then it can be you. It is the Joe Torti Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.